Listen and stream the all-new talk radio Freedom 106.5 for the only talk that matter.
Good morning, Transbago. Welcome to Freedom 106.5 FM. Good Wednesday morning to you. It's hump day. We're at the middle of the work week. Welcoming you to the Human Impact. As we continue along with the discussions, we present to you the very special program On the Pulse with Rajiv Dipti. He's a president of the Supermarkets Association of Trinidad and Tobago and third generation business owner and supermarket operator. Good morning, Rajiv. How are you today?
Good morning, Govin, and good morning to all our listeners. As you so rightly said, today is International Women's Day, and I'd like to take the opportunity to wish all the women, the young ladies, a very special International Women's Day. Of course, every day is Women's Day, and we should appreciate the women that are mothers, our daughters, our sisters, and indeed our companions on this road we call life, Govin.
That most definitely, because where would we be without the immense contribution of women each and every day in our lives? I know that might be a task for some, especially some men, just to get up and out of the house on a day-to-day basis. And I know we have a very special guest also that's going to be joining us today on the program.
We do. She's actually on the call right now. And welcome to all our listeners to another edition of On the Pulse every Wednesday with myself and Govin. And I want to take the opportunity to introduce today's very special guest to commemorate the occasion. Her name is Ashley Burnett. She's an educator and an advocate. She's a Trinbagonian born daughter of the soil. She's a 2022 Chevening Scholar pursuing a Master's of Science Education in Policy and International Development at the University of Bristol. She's a 2020 Women Deliver Young Leader and the 2022 Colin Robinson Hardhead Award winner for her transformational leadership and activism. Some of you would know her actually as the founder of Femin Titi Caribbean, where she leads a dynamic and passionate team of volunteers that uses education, social goods, and conversation to advance access to things such as sexual education and health services for young people in the Caribbean. She's also an advisor to the Global Advisory Committee for the Caribbean Region at FRIDA. And she serves as the creative lead at Transform Education, hosted by the UN Girls Education Initiative. Welcome and good morning, Ashley.
Hi, good morning, and thank you so much for such a warm welcome.
Before we begin the show properly, give us your thoughts today, this auspicious occasion of International Women's Day.
Yeah. I always feel so happy on International Women's Day, but also quite reflective because I think it's important for us to really look back at all of the progress that we've made, but also look ahead as to where we still have to go and whose voices are usually not centered in conversations when we talk about women's rights. And when we think of the history of Women's Day, and I'm really, that's at the center of my mind today, is looking at how are working class women left out, and how we need to ensure that these spaces are safe and actually are inclusive to them. So I think it's just an amalgamation of all of these emotions and reflections about where we're at and where we need to go.
Today's topic is gender equality and feminist movements. Do you think gender equality is happening right now in the world, and in particular in Trinidad and Tobago?
Right. I think that there are efforts that are being made. It has not been achieved.
Are we getting there?
Yeah. How are we getting there? I think, one, there are a lot of legal barriers to being able to achieve gender equality. You know, it's not just simply ensuring that there are women in more public spaces, but it's ensuring that they're able to stay there. You know, ensuring that they're able to be alive. And so looking at gender-based violence, looking at the type of contract that women are given when it comes to in job spaces, their pay, right? Access to healthcare and so many other things. And so when we look around the world, I mean, no country has been able to achieve gender equality because there are significant barriers. And I saw that the United Nations, where they published this, this speech talking about they were set back 300 years. And we know that's because of COVID. And how that has basically set us back to all of the progress that was being made. And so I'm seeing that there are positive changes. And I mean, like, a lot of young people are, you know, getting the knowledge needed, having the resources, and are really rallying and holding governments accountable and holding their peers accountable for change. But we have a really long way to go.
I understand that. And you've been a paragon of women's rights. You've been a champion of gender equality. And you're someone who's been a fierce advocate for feminist leadership. Can you tell us a little bit more?
Yeah. So I'm 25, and I used to feel ashamed of talking about my age because I thought people won't take me seriously. But I thought that there was power in saying that today, because I think there's so much power in having young feminist leadership, because there is that, like, personally, I realized that there is that very unique challenge that we face, right? You're young, so you know ageism is a thing. People don't take you seriously sometimes because you're young. And then you're a woman. And then there are all of these other intersecting identities of your race, your ethnicity, your social class, your social status. And the thing about feminist leadership is that it seeks to understand all of those experiences and how type of access to resources that you may need to ensure that their things are actually distributed fairly. And so I think there's a lot of power in feminist leadership. And I know that sometimes the negative connotations of feminism are the ones that gets, like, the center stage. But feminism is actually for everyone. It seeks to ensure that there are no more inequalities in our societies, that those that are most in need are given the access to the tools that are needed to be educated, to be able to afford their basic human rights. And that can't be achieved if we have any type of other leadership. And so I also used to think that men couldn't be feminists. Like, I had this very warped idea of what feminism was because of what's in the media a lot. But anyone can be a feminist, or even pro-feminism, right? It's all about ensuring that we have just futures where we're all able to be in it.
You know, Ashley, I'm very proud of you for speaking your age. And you know, I want to bring Govind in on this. Are we guilty of marginalizing young voices, and in particular young women in society, because of precisely that for all the reasons you've listed, we don't pay enough attention to younger voices?
I think so. And in terms of the on-air team, hey, I'm the youngest person on the team. And I mean, I'm getting the opportunity to speak. But even with some of the callers, they may call and say, you know, you're young, you may not know. And of course, it's an assumption. But then again, a lot of young people are very well read, because you have, you know, greater access and use of technology. You could do a lot of research. And a lot of times, young persons, their views, as Ashley's saying, may be discredited simply based on that numerical value that say, hey, you're young, you don't know. But that might be the furthest thing from the truth, because in your experiences and you know, just at your bio and so on, Ashley, at the age of 25, I think you've gotten a lot done under your belt already. And it's a very good path that I think you're on in terms of achieving and doing that activism. Definitely needs to be commended.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and Ashley, you know, expanding that question, do you feel we're guilty of marginalizing young women, particularly in society today, as the case may be?
Yeah, most definitely. And I think there's this concept of having to pay your dues. And, like, for a very long time, I felt really, like, nervous. And even coming on this interview, like, I think, and I'm, like, full transparency, like, I think as I get older, weird enough, and I'm very conscious of, like, oh, I'm actually still young. I do feel scared about speaking about stuff, because there's this thought in the back of my head that, oh my God, I haven't paid my dues. I haven't, you know, been doing this work for 20 years. And I think that is something that didn't just come from just from within, but it's stuff that I would have heard. But I think it's important that young people are given this space, because we are experts of our own reality. And there's so much power in working together to create the change that we want. And that can only happen if we value, you know, various voices, inclusive of young people.
As someone who is a feminist and who identifies strongly on behalf of women and the rights for gender equality, how are the leadership opportunities enhanced by the work that you are doing right now?
Yes, I think it bolsters and gives adds credibility to the things that I'm advocating for the communities that we work with. Because titles, I mean, for me, it sounds really good. Like listening to you read my bio, like it made me smile. But then when you really unpack it, there's a lot of work that comes with that, but also understanding the huge role that you're playing when you're in a leadership position. Like you're not just representing yourself, you're representing your communities too, and the generations before you and even to come. And so being able to exist in those leadership positions as a level of responsibility, but also boosts confidence. And I think as young women, there are so many issues we're faced with, that level of insecurity of, speak when being spoken to, and just not encouraged to pick up a lot of space. But leadership positions help to improve those very personal aspects of existing, but also to give hope to other people, to other young women, to know that they too can lead and make the decisions that are needed. I think that it all ties back to who's making decisions. And when you have women in leadership, feminist women in leadership, because that's a whole other thing, you're able to ensure that the voices that need to be represented are represented, and they're able to make informed decisions about our futures and present.
I think it's very important for young people to receive the opportunities. I mean, I'm sharing an anecdote here. As Govin said, he was the youngest on the team. And when I took up my position, I was indeed the youngest in the room. In an industry predominated perhaps by a lot of older folks. Mm. So it's important as well for young people to recognize when opportunities are available to them. And for them to succeed, they must have that confidence. And I see you doing the same thing with FemInTT. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So back in 2020, so people usually make some confusing names. So it's Feminist. It's a mashup of the words Feminist Minute that initially was trying its best to make education more accessible. And then it grew into something else. But I found it Feminist because I thought it was important for us to have and center young women in leadership who are working to create change through ensuring that education was accessible. Because as a young activist, I thought that there was a lot of information in this space that I didn't have access to. A lot of other spaces that I physically couldn't been able to access because it was either too expensive to get in. I wasn't academic enough to be able to learn the feminist lingo. And so feminist was birthed out of that need for that space for young feminists to come together to learn and to act. And so now we're 3 years old and we have been able to get significantly a great deal of work done. And that's because we realized that there's power in numbers and power in coming together as a community. And I can expand more on the work later as we get more into the conversation.
Yes. And when we come back, we're going to a break now, but we'll hear more from Ashley and Feminit when we come back.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Welcome back, Freedom 106.5 FM on The Pulse with Rajiv Dipti, and we've got a very special guest today, Miss Ashley Burnett. Rajiv?
Yes, and for all our listeners here this morning, we're coming to you live on International Women's Day, and we're featuring the dynamic, the incredibly motivated, she's highly educated, and she's so passionate about women's rights, gender equality, menstrual equity. She's sharing so much here this morning. Ashley Burnett, founder of Feminit. Ashley, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Right, and we're gonna just get back into it. So you were giving us some of this background. You were sharing so much of, what's driving you right now. How is that being received? In your role as an activist, how do you find the responsiveness has been to everything that you've been trying to accomplish?
I think when you set out to do this type of work, you never know what to expect. And me being an overthinker, I'm always very worried. And I always think worst case scenario. But honestly, it has been such a beautiful experience. Of course, very heartbreaking because you realize that, wow, there's a lot of barriers to the work that you're trying to achieve and the future that we want. But I think it was a lesson in love for me. And I talk about this a lot because it sounds like this very abstract thing about love. But I think what we've been able to do is center love in our practices as young people and in the way that we approach the communities we work with. And I think because we lead with that kind of love, that kind of compassion and kindness, and not assuming that we know everything and you know, being committed to that lifelong and constant learning, it has made the journey somewhat easy and something to really savor. Of course, there's pushback from the wider public, because we also doing engaging like online advocacy too, with, you know, trying to make some education bits more accessible to the communities. And of course, not everyone is always on the same page when it comes to ensuring that everyone is included and even the methods that we might use. But the communities we work with directly are always so grateful. And I think they teach us a lot. And I actually didn't realize that there were so many young people who were very passionate about making change, which is something growing up I heard not a lot about. People always thought that young people just wanted to go party and lime and just not focus on things that were this crucial. But there are so many young people that care. And I think it's just been such a very beautiful experience. And it's the thing that motivates me every day.
You mentioned the barriers more than once this morning. And I'm curious, are they education? Are they social tropes? What are some of these barriers that women face in the, you know, to in your own words?
Yeah, I think one of the major things it's culture, right? And we can have all the policies, all of the legal equipment, all of the legal mechanisms, right? All of the policies, everything. But if we don't have a shift in how we see women and how we see, you know, these relationships that we will have with women, not just, you know, romantic ways, but just in terms of that interpersonal, you know, relationship, we are going to be exactly where we are right now. And I know that there have been other feminists who have been talking about these things for, you know, as long as I have been alive and even before me. And that has always been one of the recurring things, is that our culture has been quite stagnant in terms of, you know, how we view and see women. And if we don't have that kind of change, then the policies are going to just remain there, because then you'll have a gap in the policies getting into practice, like actual implementation. And that trickles down into how women view themselves, right? I think a lot about the idea of, like, of corporal punishment and how even parents treat their children. And so if you have these negative reinforcements about, you know, who you are, about, like, what bad behavior looks like and how you're then treated after you do something badly, like you're beaten or whatnot, you're going to grow up thinking that that's the norm and that's how you have to be treated. And then, of course, in terms of you know, jobs, right? I saw that in an article recently. They were talking about, one, the unemployment rates. And then there's another thing that celebrates that there are more women in school now, right? A lot of them are graduating with degrees, which, if you put both together and you realize that there are, that the, like, people are coming out of university without jobs and there are more women graduating, you realize, right, that means there are more women unemployed, that are unable to make a living and to provide for their families. And so all of these things, like, it makes me very scared sometimes as a young person, as I navigate this world, because I realize that there are so many barriers. And then, of course, all of these things intersect, right? If you don't have a source of income, you can't afford menstrual health products. If you don't get proper menstrual health education in school, then you aren't gonna be able to manage your period in the way that you should. And so It's a really kind of scary spot to be in, but I think there's so much that can be done if we're able to really change our culture.
And I agree with you. I think that the cultural aspect of it is something that's so relevant, not just in Trinidad and Tobago, but around the world. How have some of these community partnerships and some of these community initiatives worked out for you? Can you give us some examples of where you've enjoyed success, perhaps, in breaking down some of these barriers?
Yeah, So one, and I'll talk to two of our projects. So back in 2020, we launched Safe Cycle, which is a menstrual equity project. And initially, Safe Cycle was supposed to be 6 months long because that's how long the grant we had gotten lasted. And we are a you know, young feminist NGO, and so we try to do some, you know, product distribution. We had 120 period boxes that provided enough products for about 4 months, because that's what we could have afforded then. And then we had this a small study that sort of really understand and explore the rate of period poverty in Trinidad and Tobago. But following that, we made some recommendations, and there were so many people who were coming to us, one, for more products. We realized that, wow, we reached out to 120 people to give these products, and there were way more who needed, right, that we couldn't cater to. And then from the recommendations, within our, like, because we, within our team, they are volunteers, but then they are volunteers who also run their own groups. And we were in conversation about how can we implement these recommendations, because we can't, it's going to take a very long time to get our Menstrual Equity Act, which is that legal mechanism that, you know, mandates different institutions to provide free menstrual products. We were like, okay, let's have these Safe Cycle care banks. And which are these banks, shelves really, that are stocked with menstrual products, and people are able to access them for free. Today we have 11 in total, right? Which is wild, because we launched this last year, November. And not last year, sorry, 2021, sorry. And we have 11 care banks right now. And that's because the communities came together and constantly restocked those banks. There are a few banks that we actually have to go restock out of the 11. And then there were other, like, corporate Trinidad who would reach out and say, hey, we want to sponsor a bank, and other charities, they want to sponsor a bank, so we can set up more. And so that kind of community action was really powerful, because now there are now over 300 people are able to access free period products every month. And that's so, because...
So Ashley, just cutting in here.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the first time that I've heard period poverty is an exigent issue in Trinidad and Tobago. We're actually a proud sponsor of period poverty projects ourselves, most notably the Crown Her Initiative lately. But in your own experience in Trinidad and Tobago, what, and I guess I'll ask Govin to weigh in here as well, do you believe that period poverty is a serious issue in Trinidad and Tobago?
Yeah, most definitely. It is a major issue, which is, I mean, it's a silent issue, because only those that are directly working on it are able to realize. And I think, and as you mentioned, Crown Her, I would have seen their study recently. And when you read the comments, you realize a lot of people were like, oh, they had no idea. You know, a lot of people aren't aware that period poverty is an issue, but it is a large issue. And it happens a lot in rural communities, and the communities that we target for these care banks are rural communities. And some of them are rural communities within rural communities that usually fall through the cracks. So it is a major issue.
And Govin, just bringing you into the conversation, in your own experience, which has been wide so far, do you think it's a real issue?
Well, definitely, because the data clearly seems to be pointing in that direction. But I think it's something that has not been getting a lot of attention, or the attention that it deserves. Maybe because persons may not feel very comfortable, you know, putting that out there that, hey, there's this need or this discrepancy that exists. But it's really commendable that the organizations have been taking up this initiative to really get the products to those that really deserve it, and those that require it, as you say, on a month-to-month basis, and simply may not be able to do so. And especially during all of these rural communities, in terms of getting access to it, I think that that's a good initiative to really put the products into the hands of those that really, really need it the most.
Yeah, and you know, I asked the question directly because there's a lot of people that say, no, it's not an issue, no. But, you know, in our own experience, both at the level of stores and community, and in Ashley's own experience, I'm sure, we've heard from women, especially women in households, how they're often marginalized because of the needs of the households and their own needs when it comes to sanitary napkins, pads, menstrual hygiene products. They're often overlooked in the scheme of things. Is that a correct assertion, Ashley?
Yeah, because I think what happens to a lot and what we've seen is that, and I think I also grew up in a household where we experienced period poverty. And because sometimes you have to choose, right? Period products are quite expensive. And when you have a very small source of income, and one, there are also multiple people in the house that are menstruating at the same time, it becomes difficult to prioritize, you know, safe menstrual products when the month comes, if you have to choose sending someone to school, buying groceries, and all of the other necessities that we, you know, have on a monthly basis. And so sometimes the period products takes a back seat. And so you have to use old t-shirts, you know, socks. I remember my mother having to cut up t-shirts when we were younger because he just could not afford to buy period products. And I had a twin sister also. So, you know, when you have more than one woman in a household, it becomes extremely expensive to be able to sustain a safe menstrual cycle.
And there you have it, folks. It's a very much a real issue, a silent issue in Trinidad and Tobago. We're going to a break, but when we come back, we continue.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
And we're back, Freedom 106.5 FM, on the pulse with Rajiv Dipti and Ashley Burnett. And well, before the break, Ashley, you were mentioning that, you know, referencing different means that persons may have to go to because of period poverty. I was thinking about, you know, the financial constraints and so on, and persons may have to resort to products that may not be of the highest standard or quality. But I never thought about the lengths that you would have mentioned that persons had probably limited options using clothing and so on.
And I think like, you know, when you're young, you don't realize that, oh, like this is period poverty. I only know it now as I got older. But there's so many people who are still, you know, living in that way. And we see it too. A lot of people who are grateful for the care banks, who said that this is the first time in like years that they've been able to use an actual pad, because they've had to resort to other options. So it is a really scary and heartbreaking reality for a lot of people.
I think that that's something that women have had to grapple with, and it's something that happens on the onset of puberty and for the rest of their menstruating life. And that's something that I don't think we see it alone in Trinidad and Tobago. I think it's an issue that's being confronted internationally.
Yeah.
How is it that, you know, in the move to achieve gender equality, in your opinion, Ashley, do we shine a light on this issue?
Yeah, I think it's important for us to unpack what it means if folks are experiencing period poverty, right? Like, what does it mean when women and girls are unable to provide the menstrual products for themselves when the month comes? It means that they're going to be excluded from social spaces. They can't go to school. And I saw in the Cronher study also, they highlighted that women and girls lose up to 3 days of school or work. That's if you think about 3 days per month, that's a lot of time that you're losing from school. It also means that for folks who don't have like any sort of, and oftentimes that intersects with jobs, that they don't have any kind of real benefits, right? So it means that they're also losing a source of income, which is that economic inequality. Then you look at that not being able to have proper education, which is another issue. And so when we look at the whole framework of gender equality, you realize that it's important to ensure that there are little to no barriers. Well, the goal is no barriers for women and girls to be able to live quality lives, because then if they can't enter into social spaces, you're keeping them in a box at home, right? Which is the whole goal of gender equality, to ensure that women and girls, everyone, are able to live a quality life where they're able to access their basic human rights. It's not a privilege to be able to have a safe menstrual cycle. It is a right. And so once we are able to have menstrual equity, we are able to have women and girls back into social spaces so that they can live, they can earn, they can learn in ways that they need to live that quality life. And so gender equality depends on menstrual equity, and we can't achieve it if we don't ensure women and girls have access to safe and affordable menstrual health products, menstrual health care services also, because there are you know, medical conditions related to menstruation that go undiagnosed because women can't afford to go to a doctor. And then, of course, having adequate menstrual health education. So it's all tied in there. So thanks for that question, actually.
It's very refreshing to hear from Ashley Brunette, the driving force behind Feminit on International Women's Day. Govind, do you want to bring up some of the messages or perhaps take a call?
Definitely. We could take some calls at 627-323-625-2257 as we hear from our listeners this morning. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Govind, and good morning to you. This is a new tune that I've heard in the 50-something plus years I've been on this, I've been living. And I want to ask the gentleman and lady, who are you targeting? Is he target market for this, for the sanitary pads reaching its audience? And because, listen, I'm all for equal opportunity for everyone. However, many of these non-governmental organizations, past and present, have been, when they peel back the outer skin, you see a little bit of what you don't want to see. My question is, the money that you get from grants and whatnot, is it reaching the desired people? And what percentage of it is reaching the desired people? Because I know all these organizations have overheads and whatnot, right? Another disagreement I have is with the gentle base here, that women and girls are not receiving proper education. I wanted to take a look at the last KIPP and SA results, and look at the results of girls to boys that have passed, and the claim that girls are not doing well in Western society is completely false. Right? What they do is that they take a small percentage of hyper successful men, and they use that to justify a male-dominated society, and that is not true.
Okay, all right.
Right? So, women are doing extremely well in our society. It may have a small portion that are not doing well through poverty and lack of education, but so are men. Men are the ones who are receiving the brunt of poverty in Western society. Thanks, Alex.
Okay, thanks for your call. So the first question, in terms of the reach or maybe the scope of the initiatives and perhaps some, you know, growth in the future as it continues to operate for years and years and so on.
Yeah, thanks for that question, and thanks to the caller also. And just to clarify for the second question, I didn't say that women and girls aren't receiving a quality education. I specified menstrual health education, which is not in the curriculum in any way. And at the moment, you know, Feminit is actually doing school tours to bring that aspect in. And it's only when schools request it, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's important for us to separate the two. Like, yes, there's the education, you know, that education system, but menstrual health education, learning how to manage your period and all that, is not in school. But yeah, that's a good question. And I know a lot of people usually think that NGOs have a lot of money. We don't. The grant that we initially got for Safe Cycle finished back in 2020. And since then, we have been being able to survive with donations from our communities and also out of pocket. The first care bank I funded, it was a thing to celebrate my birthday. I was like, I'm going to give back to community out of my own pocket. And so a lot of everyone who works in Feminit are volunteers. So they aren't paid for their work. And when we do get grants, there's usually a 30% allotment of money that can go to salaries, right? Which means people are getting paid little to nothing. But what we do to establish the care banks is reach out directly to community leaders. And so who are working on the ground in the community, because it's, we can't know what's happening in communities, right? And so there are banks in Sari Grande, there's two banks in Tobago, in Flanagan Town and Todd's Road in central Trinidad, in Windsor Park, California, which is a village that I would have grown up in. And so what we are doing is really targeting communities that are underserved and underrepresented, right, and that have support from their communities already to take the burden off of the households to ensure that people have access to the period products. So promise you that whatever grants, whatever donations that we get go right back into the community, and we are all volunteers.
What was interesting, I remember that you said earlier on in the program that as you referenced again, the first disbursement or so that you would have received would have been used out or depleted in 2020. And even with that, your members have been still doing the work, and the community has sought to come on board with you to support the initiative to restock the many banks that you have already established. So I think people are seeing the benefit and the need for it and recognizing that, hey, I can assist with this too if I just do my part.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And one of the banks, because I grew up in California, in Trinidad, which is, you know, past Cooper, before Claxton Bay. And there's one of the banks that are there, the person that is, like, you know, helping with the bank and stuff, like, it's at her home, right? People are literally opening their doors for the banks to be there so that people can be able to access it, because there isn't any, to say, an accessible community center, right? So it's really about building that level of trust. And even people who may not be able to afford, you know, all of the parts for themselves, they share to put in the bank. So, yeah, that's exactly what's happening. It's really beautiful, truly.
I imagine that these are some of the barriers that Ashley wanted to highlight today on International Women's Day. And if it wasn't for NGOs such as the one that Ashley is running right now, Feminit, there would be a lot less relief available for young ladies and women. And we're certainly not disputing whether or not they're receiving a quality education. Ashley?
Yeah, exactly. It's about, and this is another barrier too. I think it's public perception, you know. And of course, the targets, there's only so much people that you can reach. And also there is also that level of pushback that you get from people who are like, no, it's not real. No, it's probably not, you know, reaching folks. But it's important for us to, you know, really unpack where our biases come from and where our assumptions come from, because that is a major challenge when it comes for us to making change. And so, yes, we're getting quality education in schools, but are we getting to learn about ourselves and how to survive? And yes, there are, you know, free education for all, but when you can't afford period products and you're out of school three days a week, you know, that can impact the quality of education that you're getting. So it's not a debate of, you know, boys versus girls, but it's how can we ensure that people have the education that they need, inclusive of how to manage simple things that's quite natural, like, you know, your menstrual health. So thanks for pointing that out.
Sure. Let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
Good morning again, Gobin. I had to call back. I agree with the initiative that you guys are in. It's just that there are so many things going on worldwide that we have to ask questions in order to verify the validity of the organization. So I hope they don't get offense, they take offense by me digging a little bit, because in the United States, you have the government actually telling people that a man could become a woman and vice versa. And the feminism movement is very quiet, and men are taking over women's sports in America. So I have to ask these questions while the feminism movement is very quiet in the United States. So you have to ask yourself, you have to dig a little deeper. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for your call. Let's see, we could go to a short break at this point in time and then return on the program, the human, of course, on the Pulse with Rajiv Dipti, and our special guest today, Ashley Burnett. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Talk Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Welcome back, Freedom 106.5 FM on the Pulse with Rajiv Dipti and a special guest today for International Women's Day, Ashley Burnett. Rajiv?
I want to thank the previous caller. I think he made a fair point. I think it's the counterbalance to what we're discussing here this morning. Certainly, we have highlighted some serious issues on this day, International Women's Day. And Ashley, how do you feel about what the caller highlighted?
I think sometimes we can lose sight of, you know, what's happening right here in our own countries, our own region, by what's happening globally in the States, in Europe. And that can really derail us from the targets and for what we are doing currently and what we need to be doing. And so I just want to like have that call to action for folks to, you know, never lose sight of the positive work and the amazing work that people are doing right here, home here in Trinidad and Tobago, and also in the Caribbean region. I think that sometimes we do see a lot of movements being co-opted by different people. And that can be easy when you take your eyes off the prize, which is gender equality, right here in Trinidad and Tobago. And so I think it's very important to not exist in silos and to just have these, you know, only one voice being said. So I'm happy that the caller was able to, you know, kind of be that other side of the, on the other side of the table to raise those points. But, you know, we shouldn't lose sight of what's happening right here in the Caribbean region.
Yeah, agreed. And it's right here in Trinidad and Tobago that we have to take care of our own women, our own society, and the own shortcomings that we identify. And certainly Feminit has been doing that. They've been active, as Ashley described. They've had a lot of projects, a lot of the banks that they've established, a lot of that they've done, and a lot that they intend to do. Ashley, any time that we have left, do you want to perhaps talk about some of the projects on the table going forward for 2023?
Yeah, so we would have launched this project called The Right Way, which seeks to help rural communities understand what their sexual and reproductive health and rights look like. There is a national policy that speaks to it, but it's not being implemented. And a lot of people don't actually know what health services they can access. What does the law say about, you know, sexual offenses and the different things that they are entitled to. And so we would have done one cohort last year, and now we're rolling out another cohort with a home in Point Fortin. So we're hoping to go into more communities and to have these projects done so that people are able to learn about the things that they can access and what they should know. And then there's another project that we want to launch on Growing Beyond Violence. And this is geared toward engaging children and adolescents and their parents in learning healthy ways to talk about gender-based violence and how they can also be champions for creating change. And of course, we will continue our advocacy for menstrual equity and hoping to be able to partner with different organizations so that we can ensure that we achieve that collective goal.
And it's good that you shone a light on the domestic violence aspect of it, because it's been something that's been extremely worrying in Trinidad and Tobago. We've had a lot of that talking points, flash points recently, you know, and Govin, you want to weigh in on that?
Sorry, Rajiv, what was the last bit?
The domestic violence that we're shining a light on right now.
Well, it continues to be sort of a red herring, because a lot of times women may face issues of domestic violence, and at times, unfortunately, when they go to report the incident, you have the ones that are there that are supposed to protect and serve saying, you know, when things nice between you and your significant other, you don't come by us. So when things bad, why are you here? And I think that approach is something that we need to discard altogether, because it discredits and waters down the severity of an issue. And at times it could be a life-threatening one too. So I really think us as a society needs to treat with domestic violence and even the reporting of it far more seriously than we do right now.
And yes, so Ashley, you know, it's good that you're facing these projects head on, and that FemInTT is highlighting these instances. Before we wrap up this morning, what message do you have for your sisters in TNT?
take up space. It's so important to take up space as you are. And so when you get into those spaces, to bring other people in, because there's space for everyone to be able to make change. And we can't experience or even achieve gender equality if we leave anyone behind. We need to have all hands on deck, everyone moving forward together, regardless of who they are, regardless of their backgrounds. And so take up space, be authentically you, and ensure to bring other people on the journey as we work to achieve gender equality.
As you're on this point, Ashley, just to cut in a bit, in terms of organizations or even business entities and so on, having more women included in their overall organization or structure. But do you think some persons may just include women, you know, just as a kind of front, but do they actually give them the ability and the power to make decisions and to champion the cause for real positive change?
Yep. And you hit the nail on the head, because there is an issue of tokenism, right? Where you just have a woman on the table, but that's it. They don't have any voting power. They aren't listened to. But it's important that don't be intentional about it and meaningfully include women in your decision making, because that's the only way we can be able to move forward. So thanks for raising that excellent point.
Yeah, no problem. I just thought, because the point of tokenism, I think, you know, is such an unfortunate thing, because oftentimes you have really excellent points or suggestions or, you know, things to improve within an organization or whatnot. And it may just be entertained, and then, yeah, we'll talk about it, and then they kind of brush it aside and move on to something else. So we really need to work on that as well.
Yeah, agreed with you.
Yes, and Ashley, you know, you mentioned the school tours earlier. Do you all have any educational projects coming up in the near future?
So we are working on a curriculum so that other organizations can also use it too on mental health education. And we would have launched a Menstrual Equity Coalition last year, and it brings together activists and organizations who are interested to come together. And so we are going to launch another part of Safe Cycle that targets, the education system, working with teachers and educators who are, working in schools to set up more care banks and to have these ongoing workshops with their students, with their teachers, to ensure that menstrual health education becomes very mainstream.
Well, there you have it, folks. Ashley Burnett, the founder of Feminit, and she is doing her part to ensure gender equality in Trinidad and Tobago. Thank you for being on the show, Ashley, and thank you to my co-host, Govin.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, and happy International Women's Day, everyone.
All right, thank you so much, guys. So that wraps up our very special segment, of course, on The Pulse. Be sure to join us each and every Wednesday right here on Freedom 106.5 FM 4 on The Pulse with Rajiv Dipti, and as we discuss a range of topics that are pertinent to yourself and, of course, the environment that we live in.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.